This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 175 of the universe's foremost and only audio newspaper for a visual world, The Bugle, with me, Andy Zaltzman, in London and in New York City. It's the Emmylou Harris of emigration, the expert expat himself, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, you just got back from Matilda's nativity.
Yeah, that was yesterday morning, in fact.
Yeah, and how was that?
Well, I mean, it's not fully converted me to hardline Christianity.
Well, then it was a failure, then,
yeah,
I'm sure.
I believe the production was a complete failure. But it does mean that I've had going round my head incessantly for the last 30 hours, just about, the sound of 90 children aged 5 and under singing a load of catchy songs about the baby Jesus.
That's how they f***ing get you, Andy.
It was an excellent production. And I have to say, Matilda in her role as fifth narrator absolutely nailed it.
What part of the story did she handle?
Well, I mean, you're putting me on the spot there, John.
Oh, bad dad! Bad dad! Bad dad, Andy! You slept through it or you were checking your phone.
I was too busy filming it on my phone so I could just watch it over and over again every day.
I hope she never hears this, Andy.
But she put in a terrific display. I'd say reminiscence, maybe, of a young Meryl Streep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is high
yeah,
praise,
I mean,
Andy.
She kind of evoked the atmosphere of Nought AD, mm-hmm. Holy Land,
yeah.
quite beautifully. It's very evocative.
Well, that's good.
Little piece. Very strong implied criticism of King Herod's rather harsh anti-baby policies.
Yeah, well.
All done, not explicitly, but just through...
You know, through a look, through a gesture.
That's right. You know all the terms because you've been in the National Youth. Not to mention two hit movies. Oh, sorry, I've missed the S off again. Smoothies, that's all. So this is Bugle 175. There have now been more Bugles than times Calvin Coolidge called himself Cool Cat Coolio in cabinet meetings. Of course, the rapper Coolio famously named himself after Calvin Coolidge, after he fell out with Woodrow Wilson's great-grandson in a dispute over how to bone a chicken. This is the Bugle for the week beginning Monday the 12th of December, means there are just 12 praying days until Christmas, when the Almighty Lord will send the infidel a disappointingly bland bit of turkey. And therefore, the section of the bin this week is the Bugle Christmas Present Guide, including... all the must-have gifts for your loved ones, including the Iranian nuclear scientist doll. Program it to disintegrate at a random point in the near future. Who will your child blame it on? The dog? A jealous sibling? Mossad or coincidence? Also Silvio Berlusconi's autobiography as an audiobook, read by the only man who could really do it justice, the American pornography legend Ron Jeremy. Or maybe you'd like to get one of your relatives a Belgian waffle. Not the most exciting present, but after gold, the Belgian waffle is the commodity most guaranteed to maintain its value in the turbulent modern markets. Or perhaps the must-have Christmas gift of 2011 are tickets to the must-see showbiz event of the year 2012. That's Andy Zaltzman live at the Soho Theatre, London, 6th to the 11th of February, 9:30 p.m. And what an incredible show that promises to be, John. I mean, what finer gifts can there possibly be to give your loved ones than the gift of laughter, other than the gift of tickets to see someone who might or might not make them laugh? Warning, show may contain my Edith Piaf joke. And if that's not persuaded you to buy these tickets, I'll just share with you a few of the reviews that I had at the Edinburgh Festival this year. This came from the Edinburgh Fashion Supplement. Mm-hmm. Zaltzman takes the stage in a very daring backless tweed suit, offset by a salamandana, a Stella McCartney bandana made of a live salamander. Not many comedians could carry off this look, and Zaltzman is not one of them. One star. The London Presbyterian News' review, Zaltzman is not a Presbyterian. One star. Whilst the Harvard Globulent went, this show is fine, but if he tries to do it in February 2012, say, he's going to have to rewrite about three quarters of the f***ing thing. It was already showing its age by the end of August, so frankly, if he does the same shtick 6 months later, he's going to be asking to add to his already impressive collection of abusive heckles received. 5 stars! Roll up, people! Roll up! Tickets available on the magic internet. I imagine you're going to be giving your family that as Christmas present, Sean.
Oh, sure. I mean, I'll bear that in mind. And, yep. Yeah, you know, it's an option for a gift, yep. Certainly.
Yep.
That's technically true.
Yep. I know I'm giving all of my family copies of The Smurfs on DVD. So.
Well, you won't be alone in that, Andy.
Well, it depends what you mean by alone.
Top story this week, Russia has problems counting votes. There's been... It's funny because they say vote, Andy.
Yeah.
There's been big trouble in little Russia this week. To be fair, Russia is littler than it used to be as a landmass since the morbidly obese USSR was put on Gorbachev's intense perestroika diet and lost an incredible 15 republics in just 2 years, giving it that bikini body borderline that it was looking for so it could feel better about itself. There have been outrage over allegations of voter fraud in last weekend's Russian parliamentary elections. And what's surprising is not so much that there was voter fraud in Russia as the fact that there was any outrage over it. How can you be outraged, Andy, over something that everyone just assumes is going on all the time? The anger seems to come from upset at how brazenly the government was doing it. There were reports and online videos of election officers openly stuffing ballot boxes and altering the results right in front of people.
We've all been there.
It's like Russia is a long-suffering wife who has tolerated her husband's cheating for years, but who snaps once she realises he can't even be bothered to try hiding it anymore.
So, well, you know, when Vladimir Putin is starting to look a little bit shaky as a leader, things must be going unbelievably f***ing badly. So, he has, of course, tried to jab the finger of blame into the eyes of other people, John. So, let's have a quick multiple-choice question, Buglers.
Uh-huh.
Who has Putin blamed for the protests in his country? Is it A, himself, acknowledging that his government's policies have created dissatisfaction and inequality, and have allowed institutionalised corporate corruption to siphon off Russia's oil and mineral wealth to a hyper-wealthy micro-elite? Was it B, he blamed cruel, cruel fate? Or was it C, he blamed America? Any guesses?
Ooh. A combination of B and C with none of B, Andy.
Well, you're absolutely correct. The old favourites, surely the first rule of being a leader in a protesting country, when in doubt, blame America. They've all done it. Ahmadinejad, Chavez, Gaddafi, Kim Jong-il, Mugabe, Assad, Blatter. They've all blamed America. And specifically, Putin blamed Hillary Clinton for fomenting the increasingly stroppy opposition in Russia. And, you know, as chat-up lines go, John, that is going to struggle to work, I think, for Putin.
The United Russia Party, to which the Prime Minister, but really the President, Vladimir Putin, and President, but not really the President, Dmitry Medvedev, belong, lost seats overall, but not nearly as many seats as most people think they should have lost. United Russia finished as the leading party, but with slightly less than 50% of the vote, controlling 238 seats, down from the 315 seats that it used to hold. The Communist Party finished second in the balloting, followed by Just Russia, a social democratic party. And Just Russia sounds like a health drink, Gandhi. No sugar, no additives. Just Russia.
What's in that, John? Apart from 300 years of alcoholic suffering.
The elections received a poor report from the OSCE, the Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which said that in general, the election had been well organised, but they
too well organised, yeah, some would say.
Yeah, but they said there were severe problems with the, and I quote, counting process. Is that not one of the most important elements in any election, Andy? The whole counting part. If you f*** that up, it renders the rest of it pretty pointless, does it not? It's like spending hours baking a beautiful cake and then letting a horse take a dump on top of it. Sure, the cake preparation was flawless, but you'd still have to accept that it's now technically inedible.
Well, it depends. Depends who's... I reckon Blumenthal could pull that off. Cake with a horse dump on top.
Public unrest apparently started beginning when Vladimir Putin, who was president for 8 years before having to step aside due to constitutional mandate, announced in September that he was planning on returning to the presidency. Some started complaining that they'd been duped by the one-term Medvedev presidency, which suddenly looked like a convenient way of keeping Mr. Putin in power. Hold on, Andy. Again, I thought everyone agreed that that was exactly what was happening at the time. Medvedev could not have been any more of a puppet leader without Putin balancing him on his knee and shoving his hand up his arse. All I'll say is this. I've never seen Medvedev speak and Putin drink a glass of water at the same time. I've never seen that happen, Andy.
And Putin has, over the last 4 years, worn an alarming number of surgical gloves. So let's... I'm going to read into that what you will, buglers. The allegations of big-time electoral fraud really surfaced after the results came back in the constituency of St. Petersburg Central when Lenin won with a majority of 1.5 million votes. So I guess that kind of raised suspicions. Putin said, "We are required to protect our sovereignty. We have to think about strengthening the law and holding more responsible." This needs just a little tangle on. In response to the protests, Vladimir Putin said, "We have to think about strengthening the law and holding more responsible those who carry out the task of a foreign government to influence internal political processes." And I think, if I may interpret, my Russian's a bit rusty, but I think what he meant to say by that was, "Can someone get me those train timetables to Siberia? I need to make some bookings for some people."
The key difference between this clearly rigged election and all the other clearly rigged elections in Russia's past seems to be the internet. It's a lot harder for state-controlled TV to have the blanket influence it once had with social networks around. Apparently, 60 million Russians now have access to the internet out of a population of just over 140 million. And by 2016, when the next voting cycle will start, as much as 75 or 80% of Russian voters will have online access. And it wasn't just the videos of voter fraud that went viral around the internet. The Russian government also found it difficult to control Twitter. In October, a pro-government activist tried to celebrate Mr. Putin's birthday with a hashtag Spasibo Putin za eto, translated as Thanks Putin for that. But his plan backfired as the hashtag became a magnet for jokes at the Prime Minister's expense. Never underestimate, Andy, how childish people can be, even when living in a repressive regime. If you give them a hashtag like Thanks Putin for that, they're going to use it to precede that sentence with insulting comments. That's the human instinct to mischief. Of course, the Russians use their personal brand of humour with tweets such as Russia leaves the souls of poets dead. Thank Putin for that. Even with oil, there's no money. Thank Putin for that. And my personal favourite, there is no point for us to live in Russia. Thank Putin for that. It's a dark sense of humour the Russians have, Andy. It's an observational comedy that they enjoy. Just observational comedy about the bleakest parts of human existence. Here are some classic Russian jokes that they are known to enjoy. Why did the chicken cross the road? For no reason, his journey was futile. The only true journey that chicken is on is toward death, a journey in which we join him. That one is popular with kids across Russia. Also, there's knock knock, who's there? The who? The secret police, where is your husband? That was an office circular this year that proved very popular too.
All right, Chekhov. But the government has... they've also been on Twitter, John. And I think we could maybe do a big brass balls nomination for Alexei Navalny, who's an opposition blogger and political activist who specialises in kind of anti-corporate fraud shtick. And I do hope, doing that he has a rock-solid life insurance policy. But he was arrested at one of the protests and sent to jail for 15 days. That does slightly show that Russia has lost its edge. Just send them to jail for 15 days. What about wipe out his entire village in 15 minutes? But he is said to have coined the term Partia Zhulikov I Vorov, which I'm sure you don't need me to tell you means Party of Crooks and Thieves, to describe the United Russia Party. And this week, pretend President Medvedev, on his official Twitter account, talking about Navalny, said, "A person who writes in their blog the words Party of Crooks and Thieves is a stupid, cocksucking sheep." Smiley face.
Smiley face.
Yeah. Now, the tweet was quickly deleted and described by the Kremlin as a mistake. But, well, many a true word is tweeted in jest.
But that's... I mean, that is hardly surprising, Andy. As we've mentioned, you know, Russian President Medvedev is so much of a puppet, he's apparently biologically 70% felt. But Vladimir Putin, who was voted at school once most likely to one day utter the words, kill him, has been really losing face over this, not only with the controversy around all these voting irregularities, but also with embarrassing clips on YouTube. One clip shows that he was recently booed while attending a mixed martial arts fight between Russia's Fyodor Emelianenko and America's Jeff the Snowman Monson, which, incidentally, is not a particularly intimidating fighter nickname. It's probably best to name yourself after something that doesn't completely melt whenever the temperature goes over 50 degrees. The Russian won the fight, presumably by pointing a hairdryer at his opponent. But when Putin climbed into the ring to congratulate him, the crowd booed. Now, state television cut out before the booing started, but these YouTube clips show the embarrassing event in all its humiliating glory. But even the YouTube clips cut out before Putin presumably looks at the crowd and mutters, kill them, kill all of them. The key question in the midst of all of this turmoil, Andy, is one that lingers in the hearts of millions of people around the world. I have a bracelet with the key acronym for this question that I look at many times a day. The letters are WDMGT. And the question is, what does Mikhail Gorbachev think? There's hardly any decision I make in my life, Andy, without thought processes not somewhere in my mind. And as it turns out, regarding the Russian elections, Mikhail Gorbachev is not happy. On Wednesday, he called on the authorities to annul the election result and hold a new one, saying, more and more people are starting to believe that the election results are not fair. I believe that ignoring public opinion discredits the authorities and destabilises the situation. Adding, I'm Mikhail f***ing Gorbachev, so you better f***ing listen to me. Gorbachev then went even further, arguing that the authorities must admit that there have been numerous falsifications and ballot stuffing. And then added, remember, I'm Mikhail f***ing Gorbachev. Anyone in this room who is Mikhail Gorbachev, raise your hands right now. Only me? That's what I thought. See you later, you f***ing losers.
That's right, ex-Soviet big cheese Gorbachev, three times voted the 1980s world leader, whose head was most like a snooker ball, has called for a rerun. And he, in fact, earlier this year, he said that the United Russia Party reminds me of the worst copy of the Communist Party. And that doesn't sound like a compliment to me, John, because that Russian Communist Party did not end up particularly happily. Putin is due to run for presidency next March. He was president from 2000 to 2008, at which point Vladimir Putin took over whilst Putin himself became prime minister for 4 years. The two Putins are set to merge into one giant super Putin in January in preparation for the presidential election. But you also have to think, John, I mean, you've said, you know, we've all assumed that this kind of level of corruption was happening. Putin has for the first time acknowledged that there is liberal opposition to his rule. He says we must carry out a dialogue with the opposition-minded, which is an interesting term, makes it sound like a mild psychological condition that can be cured, perhaps with a train trip to Siberia. But you have to think that any leader who has won hosting rights to both an Olympics and a World Cup for his country has to be doing some unspeakable things behind the scenes. Absolutely unspeakable. Admittedly, it is a tough job running the world's largest country, particularly when it has so much A, oil, B, vodka, that's a risky combination at the best of times, and C, history. All of those three things just cause social problems, John. It cannot work for them. Right. But strangely, throughout his... he's managed to maintain, up until recently, stratospheric popularity ratings, partly because he can ride a horse without a shirt on. That's him without the horse, without the shirt, not the horse. Does the horse have a shirt on as well? I can't remember that picture.
I can't remember.
It's got a little T-shirt on.
Little T-shirt,
like one of those
yeah.
sort of skimpy ones that shows up yeah. your heavage off.
Yeah.
But, your heavage?
Yeah.
Is that a horse's cleavage, Chris?
No, it's... Are you not familiar with the term heavage?
Heavage, no.
On the front of the shirt as well, it's got an arrow pointing upwards and I'm with awesome written underneath it.
Awesome. But anyway... But also partly because most opinion polls in Russia are done by Putin of himself. But also, I think partly we have to put this in context, John. He's been popular because he's not as pissed as Yeltsin. He hasn't slaughtered as many massive swathes of his own people as Stalin. He hasn't been as dead as Brezhnev. And he hasn't been as enthralled to a bearded nutjob as Tsar Nicholas II was. So you can see why he managed to stay quite popular for so long. But they have given permission for an opposition rally, John. 30,000 people have said they want to take part through the internet. The permission has been given for 300 people to rally. 300, John. That is not a rally. That is a bridge drive. Another tweet from a protester read, "All decent people are asking Santa Claus this year for a Russia without Putin." Well, that's all very well, John, but is that within Santa Claus's remit? Right, I've got a bicycle for little Igor, a talking Anna Akhmatova dolly for Yekaterina, Oleg wants one of those train sets that goes right straight into your deep freezer, and Petrushkina, oh, she wants me to assassinate, kidnap or extradite Vladimir Putin. Ah, logistics, logistics, logistics. Oy vey. Oh, did I say that? Oh, ignore that. I did not say that. Yeah, I've got a beard. Don't read anything into that. OK, look, a job's a job. It's a profitable business. We're good entrepreneurs, traditionally. Seriously, you're going to get a Christian to work Christmas Eve night? What are you, some kind of schmuck?
Living metaphor update now. And after the recent magnificent efforts of Jefferson County and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, both going bankrupt after overspending on waste projects, and in doing so, providing the world with a stunning living metaphor, others have been hard at work as well this week, trying to do the same. Japan recently hosted, possibly, the most expensive car crash in human history. A club of luxury car enthusiasts.
What, even more than the Montreal Olympics? Boom!
Take that. Take that, Montreal. Don't think anyone's forgotten. A club of luxury car enthusiasts, which seems like a way to make luxury car owners seem less loathsome, were on an outing together, presumably driving to go swim in a champagne waterfall while sunbathing on solid gold rocks, when there was a multi-car pile-up. 8 Ferraris, a Lamborghini and 2 Mercedes were smashed up, most of which are now beyond repair. Japanese news reported that the cars were worth at least 300 million yen, which is just under $4 million. No one was seriously hurt, but the road was closed for 6 hours after the accident. And the driver of one of the tow trucks brought in to clear the scene said it was the most expensive crash he'd ever seen, by which I'm sure he meant the funniest crash that I've ever seen. All these obscenely expensive cars smashed up and all their owners looking at them all sad. It was absolutely hilarious. A lot of us, all of us tow truck guys have never laughed so hard at any crash site. I could barely hook the wreckage onto my truck. My hands were shaking so much.